Hi, it's Michael.
Hi, how's it going?
I am doing super. You want to just jump right in?
Yeah.
Where are you?
I'm in Hawaii.
Are you from Hawaii originally?
I am.
And what is the best life ever? Because I'm here confused because I'm thinking I have the best life ever, and yet you're saying you do. So I'm just wondering who's going to win this one.
Well, thankfully, it's a company we created so that everybody can have their best life ever. So I totally am curious to hear what your best life ever is like over there. But yeah, it's a company that we actually created for entrepreneurs to help them actually enjoy life as a business owner, because so many entrepreneurs work way too hard and don't make enough money to live their best life ever. So we have an online coaching program where we give people tools and resources to scale their business without scaling their time and energy.
But what's the background? In other words, why would you start this, right? Have you ever had a job at a big company? Like, what was the genesis?
So we actually started this at, my business partner and I were actually fitness trainers together. And we started a podcast because we would work with clients who were really confused as to why they weren't achieving their health and fitness goals. And so we were looking a little bit deeper into the issue and realized that there are, you know, the stress in your life, your sleep quality, your overall happiness, all of these things also play a big role in your health and fitness. And so we started this like health podcast, and then we ended up, and she and I had both worked in several corporations before. So we thought it would be a great kind of channel to work with corporations. So the first evolution of this business was corporate health and wellness training. So we would go in and we'd give people tips and tricks and kind of consult them on how to be healthier and happier at work, how to be more productive. And through the course of this, we also started working with entrepreneurs on the side. And we realized that there are so many entrepreneurs who are actually very unhappy for many of the same reasons that, you know, corporate employees are unhappy. They're working so much, they aren't sleeping well, they aren't fulfilled, they aren't spending time with their family. And the work with entrepreneurs kind of filled our cup a little bit more than the work that we did with corporations. So actually, earlier this year, we did a full switch over to strictly working with business owners. And it's been really fun.
What does that mean, filled your cup? In other words, that was just more, it was just more in line with the way you guys were feeling, or was it more profitable? What does that mean?
You know what? It's funny because the profits are about the same. And we thought that corporate would be a lot more lucrative.
Right.
But I think entrepreneurs are just as invested in themselves and their business. And so actually, it's really been on par. But working with corporations, we found that, you know, it's the managers who bring us in. It's the, you know, the boss that thinks that their employees have a time management problem or a productivity problem, and that's why they're not hitting their goals. So we come in and we're trying to solve this perceived issue. And many times that's not really the case. So it was really challenging for us to come in and not have people get the results that they were looking for, because it wasn't a productivity issue. They actually just hated their job, or, you know, there were other things that were going on that we couldn't fix. So working with a business owner, they're in control, they're in charge, and it's much easier and really more fun for us. So
it's a really interesting point, right? When I was working at big companies, we always noticed, and we used to talk about it, like the IT department would make decisions about what technology to implement. And down on the line, we would just think, well, that's not really going to help us. It may be easier for you to manage right over there. And it's the same thing you're talking about with these bosses, right? They're thinking there's a productivity problem, and the reality is there's a I hate my job problem. It's very different.
Exactly.
So what's been the impact of your podcast? How does that work? Like, what is that? What do you talk about? Who are your guests? Or is it just the two of you talking?
When we first started our podcast, we actually had an entirely different one, and that was just the two of us talking, and it really didn't have any direction. We just talked about whatever we wanted to talk about, and that was fun. But as soon as we decided to create a business around this, we rebranded, and so now our podcast is strictly focused on, you know, bringing mostly kind of successful business owners on to share about how they live their best life and what kind of tips and tricks and motivation they have for other business owners to not get so bogged down and not get so stuck in the challenges of owning your own business. And so, you know, we bring on both big business owners and very, very small kind of local startup guests, but everybody has such a cool message. And really, everybody that we've had on so far, they seem to all be aligned in that I think business owners forget that they deserve wealth and they deserve to be happy and they deserve to create a schedule that they enjoy, and that the hustle doesn't have to be hard and it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to give up your sleep to have a successful business. And so it's been really cool to hear success stories from people who are enjoying their life. So that's really our mission.
Yeah. And how do you go out and find people to be a guest on your podcast? And I haven't listened yet. I'm sorry, because I didn't know, but does just one of you do it, or do two of you do it and then talk to a guest? What's the structure?
Yeah. So we're both on every episode and we really just reach out to people who inspire us, and, you know, you just take the risk. If they're so big that they may not even check their email themselves, then we may not get a response. And sometimes people say no, sometimes people say yes. But recently we actually had a guest on who owns a company called Command Your Brand. And what he does is he actually sells podcast tours. So his team will learn about you, learn about your mission, and set you up on various podcasts that are aligned with your mission. And so we've actually recently invested in one of his programs, and we've done a 10 podcast tour, and we actually just bought 14 more interviews because it's been so amazing. And normally, you know, we'll go on someone else's podcast and we'll have them on ours. And through this, we've really grown our audience and grown our brand. And now people are quite frequently emailing us to come on our podcast rather than us reaching out. So it's been a really cool shift in our business.
It's pretty interesting, right? When I first started, I was really concerned that I would ask somebody and they would either A, just ignore it, or B, just say no. And what I found is that I'm having like a 70% yes rate or 75% yes rate. It's really interesting. And I think it's just that people are generally nice and more generous than you would expect. And in some cases, the more important the person is, the more generous they've been with their time, which I find really fascinating. Like, I find that people sort of at the mid-tier and mid-level of importance are just like, I don't need to talk to you. And people that run like gigantic companies, you know, and sit at the top of a global pyramid are just like, sure, when do you want to do this? It's a month out, but I'm happy to be on the show with you. It's really amazing to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think people just really want to help. And that's just human nature. And we forget that.
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing, you know, here's something else that I wish they would teach you in school. And that is you never get anything you don't ask for. Right. So you could sit there going, I'm running this great podcast. How come nobody? And then you're just like, wait, I'm just going to call and ask them. Because in general, most people will say yes, but you can't expect them. Now, you're in a position now where people are coming to you, and I kind of have the same thing. But when you first start, you have to ask.
Absolutely. There's a fear of rejection.
Sure.
And it's, you know, the first time you get rejected, you realize it's not that bad and you just keep going.
Doesn't matter at all, really. Doesn't matter at all. Anyway, so let's back up a little bit. You went to university, yeah? Did you go to school in Hawaii as well?
I went to undergrad in Colorado, and then I did my master's here in Hawaii when I moved home. After I was in China. Yeah.
Yeah. So you also did one of these Next Step Connects, didn't you? It was a while ago.
Yeah. I think it was 2009.
Oh my God. I think I was still a little boy then. Okay. That's not true. I was in my 40s, but still.
Count it. Age is but a number.
Exactly. So what made you do it? I mean, when you go back and you think about it, you're going undergraduate school, you're doing a regular thing, you're from Hawaii, obviously, but you're in Colorado and you're thinking, okay, I've got to go to Asia? Like, what was the thought process there?
it's a good question, because I had to do some thinking about this too. So I graduated from college in 2008, and that was right during the recession here in the US.
I remember it well.
So yeah, right? And it didn't really occur to me that I would have trouble. And I guess as a college grad, you kind of have this air about you where you're like, oh, I have a degree now, like, everybody wants to hire me. I know all of these things.
I'm fine.
And, yeah, right. And then very quickly realized that even without a recession, a recent college grad doesn't know enough for anybody to want to hire them, let alone nobody has any money. So I couldn't find work. And I had traveled abroad on semester at sea when I was in college, which was awesome. You live on a cruise ship and you travel, and we stopped in 12 countries.
Where did you go? Because the semester at sea used to stop in Tokyo when I was working.
Yeah, we did stop in Tokyo. So we started in Mexico, and we circumnavigated the entire globe going west.
Wow.
So we actually started in Asia, Japan, China, Hong Kong, Vietnam, Cambodia, Croatia, not Croatia. Well, yeah, Croatia, but that was later. Cambodia, India, Egypt, Spain. I think that's it. Burma. I miss Burma.
Myanmar. Do you remember what that was like? And almost more importantly, right, when you said to your parents, I'm going to go do a semester at sea, like, I don't know what it's like. I was from a small town. Like, I grew up in the suburbs in the United States, right? And when I even said I was going to go to Japan, my parents thought I was insane. Do you remember what that was like for you? Or did your parents just be like, yeah, sure, that's fine?
Well, my dad is a traveler. I mean, he lived in so many different countries as a kid, and he speaks many different languages. Awesome. So he was really excited. My mom was terrified.
Yeah, doesn't the word mother come from the Latin root worry too much?
Does it?
No, it doesn't. But doesn't it seem like it should?
It's like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually was at the point where I wouldn't share things with her until after it was done.
Mama just got out of a Turkish jail.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Like Burma was kind of in a rough state at that point. And like, we were told, you know, do not speak about the government because there are legitimate spies. And if you are heard, you could be like killed on the spot. That's what happened. So, you know, have fun and be careful. And we're like, oh my God. And Burma was one of my favorite places. It was beautiful. The people were wonderful. But I definitely didn't tell my mom that fact until after we left. Yeah. Yeah. So, but the thing about semester at sea was you experienced all of these places, but only for 5 days at a time. So I really wanted to kind of immerse myself in another country, in another culture, and pick up some language along the way, which I always laugh because I chose Shanghai and I had a Mandarin tutor, but they speak a different dialect that's completely different from Mandarin, right? Shanghai dialect. So I didn't actually pick up much Chinese language while I was there other than like learning from my tutor, which was wonderful. But yeah, it's always kind of funny that that's what I chose.
So back then, did you have a choice as to which city you were going to go to? Or was the program just said to you, this is what we have available, and you just went to Shanghai as a matter of course?
Yeah, I think we did get a choice. And so I was choosing between Beijing and Shanghai. Okay. And I went.
Good choice. And how much do you remember of what that experience was like?
I feel like I remember a lot of it. Still very fresh in my mind.
And what kind of internship did you do when you were there? You was it 2 months, 6 weeks? How long was it?
I think it was 3 months. And I worked at a international marketing firm. Okay. So I was interested in marketing at the time. And the firm was based in Shanghai, and it was geared towards US companies who wanted to bring their food and beverage products into China. And so what we would do is we'd sell market report, like really extensive market reports, to the US companies. And then they'd fly over, we'd host dinners, we'd go to trade shows. And so my main job there was to write the reports. And as a native English speaker,
right.
I mean, good call for them, because it would take them like 6 weeks to 2 months to write these reports that would take me like a week. So, you know, I made them a lot of money, I think.
Good for you. Do you remember being nervous at all? Like, what was your, and did your impression of like what China was meant to be like in your mind change after you'd been there for 3 months and you thought, okay, wait a second, I've learned something completely different about what China is like than what I thought it was going to like before I arrived?
I had gone to Beijing when I was on semester at sea. Right. So that was the China that I had been anticipating. And Shanghai is just the coolest city. It's so clean. It's so modern. So in that sense, it was completely different from what I had expected.
Right.
And I was a little bit nervous, but my dad, being the world traveler that he is, he actually came with me and stayed for a week. And then also got like a 3 month travel visa and came back to China several times, but never came back to visit me. He went to like all these different places, and yeah, it was hilarious. But that definitely made me feel a little bit more comfortable. But yeah, it was interesting going to work in a different place. Like, that was an experience I'd never had before.
Right.
And it takes a little bit to learn the work culture of a new country. You know, it was a corporate environment, and there were actually a lot of rules and a lot of emphasis on appearance. So they encouraged us to wear heels and, you know, tights and skirts so that we looked very professional. And it was really funny because my coworkers, it was just like anywhere else. Like girls would be like, oh, I don't want to put my heels on. So they'd come to work in sneakers and they'd change. Or if the boss was out, they wouldn't change their shoes. And then they saw him coming down the hallway and everybody would run to their desk and put their shoes on. And, you know, it was a very humanizing experience in that you realize we're all really very similar.
Yeah, I was going to say, how long did it take you to figure out when you were there that you could have been in Boston? You know what I mean? Because I'm convinced that
it felt like I could have been.
Right?
Yeah.
It did, right? And I mean, I'm convinced that it's not just there's a culture in a new country, but every company has its own culture, right? Like it doesn't matter whether you're working at IBM or Cisco, just to pick two companies at random, but moving from one to the other, it requires a cultural change. That's very subtle and hard to explain, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And it didn't take long, actually. It really didn't. Because, you know, I mean, you're thrown into it. It would be one thing if you learned about it beforehand and someone tried to kind of brief you on it. But, I mean, that's the beauty of immersion, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the intense beauty of immersion, right? I mean, you may or may not know this, but when I was in college, I went and studied and lived in Japan for a while. And then I lived in Japan after that for another 20-something years. And that immersion actually really helped me understand what different cultures were like, what the power of language is, how food is embedded in culture, and all these other things that I learned over time. I'm just wondering what you took away. So when you left after being there for 3 months, are there a few things that you just keep with you from then that you still use every day or that you still think about when you're building your own business or when you're interacting with other people?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, going back to just the idea of no matter where you are, no matter where you're human, and people are generally really, really great. I mean, they just are doing the best they can with the awareness that they have, no matter where you are. And I remember someone told me when we were on the train in Shanghai, and it was a friend that I had made she was from the US, but we had met there. And I remember this conversation like it was yesterday. She goes, you know, before I came here, I just thought Chinese people were always so angry because they sound so mad. And, you know, because the language is tonal, right? And she's like, I just can't believe how nice everyone is. And I'm like, yeah, like people are just trying to live their life. And, you know, it's busy, it's crowded, and they just want to get home to their family. And, you know, we're all just living life. And it's really, it kind of warms my heart to know that no matter where you go, people are generally good people and they just want
to
help.
I like to think about it this way. There's a young girl today who's getting on a plane to do an internship or go to college, you know, in Santa Barbara. And her mother is from a small town in China, and her mother is worried in a way that only your mother would understand,
mm-hmm.
right? And her dad is the same way your dad was and just thinks, you know what, my daughter's going to be fine. Maybe I'll go with her and drop her off, and then I'll just leave her alone and have her build her own confidence. And that's a universal feeling from a family perspective. And I think once you figure those things out, the world becomes a much smaller but also a much nicer place,
mm-hmm.
right? You realize, like, food, shelter, safety, comfort are things that are just universal to humans, not to cultures, right? And then sure, there might be subtle differences where, you know, food in Hawaii is different than food in Shanghai for sure. But to be fair, food in Shanghai is different than it is in Beijing too. And those mm-hmm. people aren't constantly fighting with each other. And I think once you realize that, it just becomes much easier to get along with, you know, your neighbor, for lack of a better term, but also somebody who lives halfway around the world from you.
Totally. Yep, completely agree.
Yeah. So do you remember, so you came home, you went through this whole internship program. Do you remember thinking, I've got to tell people to go do this because it'll change their lives?
Yes, for sure. And, you know, I don't know if anybody actually went through Next Step Connections or did anything similar, but it was so valuable. And it just really opened my eyes and really made me grateful that I didn't just settle for whatever company would hire me at the time.
Right.
Which is what I kind of saw happening with my peers. And, I would never say that to anybody, but it made me realize that you have so much freedom and so many options to experience anything that you want. And to settle for a job or anything else in life is really heartbreaking. And I don't know if I would understand it to the depth that I do without that. So I'm super grateful for it.
Right. And this loops back to like best life ever, right? And that mm-hmm. is, and that it really does though for me. And that is, you just shouldn't settle for anything. And, you know, proximity is no longer a problem, I think, in the world, right? Whereas, but if you were born and raised in Boston, like you can venture outside of Massachusetts and have a great life. But today you can venture outside like so far away and so far afield. And just because there's something within 100, you know, there isn't something within 100 kilometers or 200 miles of you, go somewhere really far away and find out what you really love to do and then go do that. Or go try it and fail. It doesn't really matter. But don't settle for just the everyday norms, because if you do that, you're just doomed to failure, no?
Right. I mean, failure is great. And failure because of risk is beautiful, and there's a lot of growth. Failure because of stagnation and you know, fear of taking action and feeling stuck when you're actually not, you know, that's the kind of failure people regret on their deathbed. And life's too short. You've got to just do the things.
You got to just do something. So when I was when I was in college, I was going to say my friend, but it would be unfair. My girlfriend in college's dad said to us once, he goes, "You have two choices. You can either live life or you can let life live you." And mm-hmm. I've always thought about when I go and make a decision, because the other thing he said was, right, you have a choice. You can either make the decision or let the world make the decision for you, right? So
right.
Why not just go out and try something? And this is something I try to tell my daughter too, right? No individual day is fatal. And you're doing the right thing as long as you're the one making the decision, mm-hmm. by definition, right?
Absolutely. And we forget that we're in control.
Yeah, all the time.
We get to choose every day.
Right. It's like, who decided that for you? Why not just go ahead and decide for yourself, what if I fail? What if you fail? What if you don't try? That's worse than anything.
Totally. Totally. And there's so much growth from failure. Like someone on an interview the other day asked us what our definition of success is. And I hate that question because it infers that success is the positive and that failure is the negative, when both should be celebrated. And again, like failure only comes from taking a risk. And without taking that risk, you never see the success either. You just stay where you are. And that's no way to live.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't like the question at all. What, like, how do you define success? Well, you know, it changes every day, frankly.
Right.
It changes every moment. Success to me is just like giving stuff a shot and seeing what happens. And I was telling somebody else today, like, life is just one day at a time, one step at a time. And as long as you're making forward progress, you're succeeding. You can't, totally. You also can't measure yourself against other people because, and I'm going to put it in quotes, right? But your most successful people will tell you, like, there's no formula. And whatever sort of monetary and physical success they have doesn't necessarily make them any happier than you or somebody else. And that's not me talking. That's like Elon Musk talking. Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I feel pretty confident in that opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think people put so much unnecessary weight on money and wealth.
Who cares?
And while who cares, right?
Who cares?
And like if you want money, then make money. It's up to you. Like that's a personal choice. It doesn't make you evil. It doesn't make you a bad person to want and to have a lot of money. But it's not the end game.
No, not at all. And I love the fact that you've called your business Best Life Ever. Here, let me ask you this question. What time is it for you in Hawaii? I haven't checked.
It's 6:40 a.m.
In the morning. It's 6:40 mm-hmm. in the morning. Remember, you pinged me with 6 o'clock and you're like, what are you doing? No, it's really important. I want to mention this, right? Because you know what time it is for me? It's 11:40 at night. So I feel like, and I'm not complaining. Do I sound like I'm tired? Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I have the best life ever because I'm doing what I want to do every single day, every day.
Awesome.
And let me ask you this. So what do you expect this business to turn into? Like, what do you want it to be? Where do you want it?
Well, we've actually created a super scalable system where we do most of our coaching and our program lives online. So in the next year, we just want our online program to explode because we essentially put in the same amount of time, maybe a little bit more if we get 10 people or if we get 100 people in the program. So kind of short term, that's what we want to do. We just want to expand our service and help as many entrepreneurs as we can. And long term, I mean, we'd love to, you know, speak at different events all over the world and travel. And I know we've talked about, like, do we envision selling this business? Do we envision
don't sell it
doing something different? Yeah, I don't think I want
why
to.
Why would you sell it? Here's the thing. You build a platform. You don't have to use the platform for the same thing. in perpetuity. Have the platform. Why would you sell a platform to someone? Startup sense to me, but again.
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, again, it just is so, a very, very fulfilling mission. And it's really something that I've known that I've wanted to do for a long time, but I didn't really know how or even really what it was until it took shape. But also the next kind of iteration of this is also creating a digital media agency. So she, my business partner and I build websites, online courses, do graphic design ourselves, and we find a lot of joy from it, and so we offer that as a service, but we are only two people,
right?
And it's really fun actually to help people in this way, so we'd like to grow that side of our business as well in the next year or two. So,
and is your business mostly in the United States? Is that even fair to say, or is it
it's funny, right? Like, an online business is it's definitely global. We have most of our clients now.
So, sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you.
Oh, no worries. Yeah. So most of our clients are US based now. We have one now who kind of goes back and forth between Japan and Hawaii. And that's kind of the most international we get. But we literally have it lives online. So you could be anywhere.
Right. The reason why I ask is because I look at some of the podcast and media businesses that exist in the United States, some of the big ones, right? And I look at some of their statistics on SimilarWeb or on Alexa, and it's so heavily concentrated in that 90% of their penetration is just in the U.S. It's really interesting to me. The English-speaking world is actually quite large, and I look at other people's data, my own, and it's like in, you know, 70 countries, and I just wonder, and I approach them on a frequent basis, and I say, wouldn't you want to expand your stuff to like other parts of the world? Like, nah, don't care. So that's one of the reasons why I asked. Like, it's just interesting to me that somebody would be, and not you obviously, but that somebody would be so provincial minded for an online business where it should just be global by definition.
Right. I mean, it's so calling the online world global, like it's inferred, right?
I think so.
There's no reason not to. And I recently invested in a program specifically around marketing an online business. And I'm so grateful that I was a part of it because I realized, so they did live calls every week for ongoing support, which is similar to what we do. And we spent a lot of time figuring out what time we should have these support calls. And we're like, well, you know, if somebody's in Europe, it's going to be this time. If someone's on the mainland US, it's going to be this time. And we couldn't really find a sweet spot. Obviously, right? You cannot find one time that works for everyone in the world.
No.
It's like a no-brainer.
No.
But in this program, people were all over the planet and jumping on at 3 a.m., 2 p.m. Like, it doesn't matter. If you want the service, if you want the support, you make it happen. Wherever you are.
Yeah, it's so funny. So maybe this is the last thing that I should say, and then I'll let you go. But, you know, I buy websites, right? Obviously, because I have a business that relies on me having a web presence. And if I have questions about that web business, I'd like to be able to talk to those people. Unfortunately, they're in Canada and their business hours are 9 to 5. And I just wrote them, a chat or an email. I can't remember what it was, just saying, you're running a domain selling service. How can you have 9 to 5 business hours? Yeah, exactly. That was my response too. That was my exact phrase. There was nothing else to say. But it was weird. They didn't get it. It's so provincial. Anyway, look, I should let you go. It was super great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it. It's so fun. I could just keep going forever. So thank you.